Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way, hands down, to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and this is a godsend 24/7 customer support. Start building your website today at squarespace.com. Enter offer code CG, like Chris Gethard. CG is the offer code. You put that in at checkout, you get 10% off. Oh, hi there. Hello. You're listening to a show. I bet you're wondering who I am. My name's Chris Gethard, and the show is called Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People. It's one phone call, 1 hour, no names, no holds barred.
I'd rather go one-on-one. I think it'll be more fun, and I'll get to know you, and you'll get to know me.
You're about to hear a very intense phone call. If you like your podcast to be light and funny, through start to finish, and you like just having them on in the background, this episode, treat this one a little differently out of respect for this very brave, honest, fascinating human being who shares so much. Guys, I cannot stress this enough. And I'll tell you what, here's a tease. It's the only call so far where we broke the rules. There's very few rules to this podcast. We break them. You'll hear why, and I think you'll agree that it's okay to break the rules sometimes because you got to put people first. Got to break the rules if it's about taking care of another human being. And this person opened up and gave us all the chance to take care of her. So I hope we choose to do so. Enjoy this call. I did. It was intense. I had to push the mic away a few times because my emotions were really getting the best of me. I will never be able to thank this caller enough for being so brave and so honest. Beautiful Anonymous. Check it out.
Thank you for calling Beautiful Anonymous.
Hey, this is Gethard. How are you?
Hi. I would love to say my name, but I won't.
Oh, well, yeah, that's like the whole premise, so that would be good.
Well, it's nice to meet you. You're a very funny favorite of most of my podcasts, so.
Oh, that's awesome. So you have a podcast.
Oh, well, I'm working on one, but I listen to a lot of podcasts.
Oh, I understand. Nice. Very nice. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for the kind words. Yeah. So we can talk about whatever you feel like.
Well, can I ask you some questions and start there?
Okay.
Ooh, okay. Can I ask you some weird ones? I've got a couple on deck, actually.
Uh-huh. You sound like you've do you have these written down somewhere?
Whenever I come up with strange questions, I like to write them down because I think that, I don't know.
Oh, perfect. This is perfect.
So, okay. If, you were to start your own country, who would write and or sing the national anthem?
Wow. That's just a question you had sitting around?
Yeah. Whenever I come up with strange questions, I used to do an interview show.
Uh-huh.
And so whenever I would come up with strange questions, like I'd sit on the bus or be, you know, just
well, this
overhearing
is
people. At...
This episode is going to fly by.
I also have some other ones if you don't like that one.
No, I like that one. I mean, my answer would have to be Morrissey. I'm obsessed with Morrissey. Have been since I was 14 years old. I have two Morrissey-related tattoos. So how can I in good conscience say anybody but Morrissey would write the national anthem? Which also means it would be like
right.
Self-deprecating and charming and slightly sad, which I think are things that if I founded a country, those would be core. Those would be like in the Bill of Rights, some of those qualities. So...
I could imagine a very sensitive and emotive type song. I could see that.
I would. I think I'd like to be the founder of a very sensitive and emotive country. I love those words. Yeah. I'm into it. Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. If you were to be eaten by an animal of your choice, which one would it be?
Great
and okay,
question.
The thing is, you have to die.
Okay.
And you have to be eaten by this animal. But you get to choose the animal.
Okay, so I have to die if I'm going to be killed by an animal. Can I ask for some weird clarification?
Sure.
Is this in private or is this something like my wife might see? Because
your choice.
I have two I have a dual answer. If it's there's a part of me that feels like the most fun answer is to get mauled by a polar bear in a very public place, no explanation, no context, somewhere like Times Square, maybe directly underneath the Eiffel Tower. Just I'm screaming in my underwear.
Nice.
I turn a corner, I'm screaming in my underwear. A polar bear is rampaging behind me, pins me down, kills me, and no one ever finds out how I got my underwear, why there was a loose polar bear in the middle of Paris, France. Like, I like that. As far as the humor value and like legend building, I really like the idea of like you have to tell your own story sometimes, and I think that's served me well in my life to like be kind of aware of who I am from the outside and how to like help tell that story. And I think that would be a perfect end to a story. But then I think about the fact that like my wife would see that on the news, my mom would see that on the news, and I don't like that part. So there's a part of me that feels like the noble way to go out for my loved ones is just
they would
to
have to relive that
all the time.
Cause they
it would be legendary footage. So then there's a part of me that's like, maybe I just get like swallowed by a giant anaconda. Like I'm there and then I'm gone. And nobody ever has to think about it again. So it really depends on how much of a narcissist I am on that particular day. How much do I want the attention?
Wouldn't there still be a giant Chris Gethard-shaped, anaconda
trying
to slither around?
At least for a few hours, you'd see the distinctive outline of my trademark glasses through its skin. And I like that part. I like the fact that you'd see my hands feebly trying to punch through the anaconda. I like it. But it does bring up an interesting thing, which is like, once I got married, I feel like my narcissism really, I lost about a third of it because all of a sudden I had to worry about someone else, you know? And this, the answer
you
to your, oh yeah, go for it.
Oh, I was going to say, do you think that actually started when you got married or do you think it happened before then?
Well, it's interesting.
Or do you think it just was cemented at that point?
Well, it's like I feel like every comedian, any public performer, especially someone who does solo performing, you got to be a little bit, you want the spotlight on you, on some level. And I'm a pretty shy person in real life, but bottom line is that, let alone I have, I think the project that most people associate me with is this show that I have that's named after me. So there's definite elements of narcissism there. But I look back and tons of the stuff I used to do creatively was all about like, how can like I wind up in a fan's house or what can I do to get a person like I once hosted a show in my house. I once did a show where people wound up visiting my parents' house without us telling them. It was all about me. And now they're getting married puts up some limits. Like I don't want anyone to know where I live. I don't want anybody to even know what neighborhood I live in because I got this wife and I dragged her in. She's not a comedian. She didn't sign up for this. So I drag her into this world. I can't have all these, I love anybody who's a fan of my work. I really love them. But I'll tell you, I don't think any of them would argue that they're known for being a socially awkward lot. And at times that can be a little bit intimidating. And at times you have a conversation with me. I don't always know how to have a conversation. And you have somebody else who's nervous or doesn't know how to have a conversation in their own right. And it can feel a little bit, like when you're having a conversation like that, that's stunted, you feel a little bit like, man, like your guard goes up. And I don't like dragging my wife into that. So I've really slowed down with like the all access nature of things in my life. So thank you for asking a cartoonish question about animal death because it really has helped me put this in perspective. What animal would you get eaten by?
Really? I would like something legendary, I think, like a giant whale. I'm on a...
Biblical.
It would be something, if you were out on a cruise or some kind of thing like that and just a giant whale. It would have been like the polar bear thing, except for without the gruesome part.
Mm-hmm. Smart.
And I think that would be kind of epic.
I like that. So I like that you're on a cruise ship. I like that you're on a vacation. So what? How does this work?
It's like end on a high note, hopefully.
Oh yeah. So you're on a vacation. You're playing shuffleboard on the top deck. There's a wind. There's a gust of wind. Everyone sees it. You're holding the rail, and the wind is holding you horizontal. And everybody.
It's just gorgeous. It could not be more beautiful. It's just. No stress. Everything in my life has been taken care of.
Yeah.
I'm on vacation. It's the last day heading into giant whale, and then it's a whale like they've never heard of this species before.
Yeah, like you blow off, and people see you falling, and they're like, you know what, it's not high enough that she's going to die. We'll get the lifeboat, we'll go get her. But right before you hit the water, giant whale leaps out. You're caught. What's that color in their mouths? Baleen?
Yeah, I think it is. It's like giant push broom material.
Yeah, you
like
get sucked through
like
that.
Canada,
yeah, like a big car wash. Like a big car wash in a whale's mouth. And then what do you think? Do you die immediately, or do you live a life inside the whale for a while? Do you ultimately die inside the whale of malnutrition because you're just eating the plankton it eats and a human can't sustain on that?
I would assume there would be some kind of instant death of suffocation.
Suffocation.
I mean, I'd like to think it was like Pinocchio, and I could have a little like table, and you know, the tide comes in, the tide goes out, but it would smell so bad in there.
I like that in this world of you falling off a cruise ship and being eaten by a giant whale that's right there. Ultimately, in the end, you're a realist. I like that part.
I'm very dichotomous. What can I say?
I like it. So you mentioned you had a podcast, and you can't reveal too much. You mentioned you had an interview show, and I know you can't reveal too much just because you're staying anonymous. But
well, I used to, but I'm actually working on one now where it's all me. So when you were talking about that kind of pseudo narcissism, I kind of understand that.
Yeah.
I think it's the desire for me personally to put something out into the world that actually is responded to in a way. And I think that's kind of what, like every time I see you in something and other people will miss, you know, I'm a very deep comedy nerd. So, you know, when I see certain people, I'm like, oh, that's so-and-so, or that's so-and-so on At Midnight. I can't believe you don't know who that is, you know, or blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so I get kind of excited about stuff like that. And I think maybe just at one point, I'd like for someone to be like, that person made me laugh when I didn't think I could. I was having the worst day and I put this little stupid 15-minute podcast on and I just laughed.
That's awesome.
I mean, who doesn't, right? Like, who doesn't want that in some way? And I think that's why my favorite performers are kind of similar to you in that way, where it's the introverted extrovert. Do you feel like that applies to you? Like you're very much, I want to be out with people, but when I don't, I really don't.
Yeah, definitely. And that's, first of all, thank you for the kindness. Second of all, I'll say, I assumed you were a deep comedy nerd because you've on some level heard of me, which means you're in pretty deep because I'm pretty low on the totem pole. But I think that's totally true.
Trust me.
I think that's really true what you just said. And to me, that's the best part of the job as a comedian as I've gotten older. It's funny because I've had I've had some professional successes. I've taken my lumps. But to me, at the end of the day, I feel like what's still, it's weird because it's like when I was younger, you know, you used to chase success. I saw a lot of my friends getting famous. I'm like, why not me? Chasing that. But then there's been times where I've gotten close to high profile stuff and some stuff that I think some people don't get to have. And that there is a mark of success there. But ultimately, what's funny is that what it always loops back around to for me is that the best part of being a comedian is exactly what you said of like somebody's having a shitty day and I can get them to laugh. That's a great gig. To me, that feels like you're doing something that's actually positive on some level. And I'm not a saint. I'm not saying that I'm like solving the Flint water crisis by any means. I'm not saying that I'm like, you know, I'm not on a Greenpeace boat stopping you know, whalers, but on some level, I think I'm doing something positive.
Well, you better get out there because one of them's going for me.
Yeah, I mean, I should be. Well, no, hold on though, because if I was on a Greenpeace,
one of those whales is coming after.
Exactly though, but that's why you don't want me on the Greenpeace boat, because if I'm on the Greenpeace boat, I might save the whale that someday kills you.
Ah, damn it! You're right.
You're an anti. You should officially be anti-whale at this point.
I'm very pro-whale. So let me ask you, when you said you thought you were close to success, and I don't know, would you like this to be more steered toward you or me? Because either way, I'm down.
You know what?
But I want to ask you, what do you consider success? Because you said that you felt like you were close to it. And the thing is, by most people's standards, you are very successful. So the thing is,
it's all a personal
100%
adventure at that point.
So let's talk about this, because I'm loving this conversation.
Oh, yeah, unpack that.
You're being very thoughtful, and thank you for it. So two things. One is whatever you want it to be. So if you want to keep talking to me, that's fine. I'll tell you my natural instinct is going to be to keep trying to make it about you, so we can just ping pong that back and forth, see how it goes. I like that we've called
it
out. And as far as it's interesting. It's like, as far as what success is, it's interesting because I self-deprecate. My friend Tammy, I have a good friend, Tammy Sager. She's one of my best friends. We do a lot of comedy together, and she always yells at me because she's like, you self-deprecate too much, and you're actually like a hardworking dude, and you fought for some stuff, and you have some success. And you gotta
do the thing. I think I do this too, but do you do that like, oh, I'm such an idiot, you know, just for over nothing? That kind of stuff, or is it just deeper?
It cuts deeper on a few levels, which is one, like, I understand that I have some success. I have a TV show named after me. It's my job now. I've written a book.
Yeah,
like, that's cool. Thank you for watching it. And there's some stuff out there that I've done. But there's a few things about it. It's like, one, it could all end tomorrow. You know, it could all end. Right. And like, the success of that creatively, I'm very proud of. But financially in particular, like if my, I don't know, I don't want to air my finances. I said I have a wife. I like to keep some things private.
I'm on food stamps trying to become a voice actor. So I completely understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like whatever success is to you.
Yeah. So it's like I am successful, but if my show got canceled, like we're about to start at the time we're taping this. I don't know when this will be released, but we're like going to start taping the next season of TCGS in about 6 weeks, I think. And if we do our 10 episodes and then it gets canceled, I'm telling you, I don't know how I'm going to be paying my mortgage by the end of the year. So that's a scary thing.
And that's so hard for people who do freelance. Like, I edit sound and stuff like that for podcasts for people. I never know when they're going to want me to do that. So I'll get someone who's like, hey, here's $20. Here's this much. Can you come record this or do that thing? Sure, but you never know when it's going to come back in. And I'm even further down on the totem pole, you know, to the point where, you were on at midnight. I was actually in the audience the one episode you were on.
Oh, that's awesome. I had a lot of fun with that.
And, and the thing is, it's great, but it's one of those things I'm like, those guys probably think that they are unsuccessful. And it's just that when you hit the next tier, okay, well, when I get here, will I be happy? Will that make me happy? You know?
Well, that's the big thing. It's success. That's one thing that it's taken me years and years to realize, which is that success and happiness are not synonymous. They're not. And you have to kind of...
Oh, no.
It's true. And I think you kind of have to prioritize which one you want at times. Because to me, it's like... And for some people, success is a pathway to happiness. For myself, I have kind of learned that it's not. And one of the most eye-opening moments, I think, of my entire life was... At this point, this must have been about... Geez, like... Maybe... 8 or 9 years ago, I was doing a show at UCB in New York, and UCB, it's a comedy space where a lot of the, a lot of famous people drop by, and I was
I know UCB.
Yeah, and I was in the green room one night, and I was listening to two people talking, and I was just kind of a fly on the wall. I wasn't eavesdropping. They were talking right in front of me, and these are friends of mine, so they were comfortable, but they were talking. One of them was on Saturday Night Live at the time, and the other one was a correspondent on The Daily Show at the time. And they were two old friends, and they were talking, and they were like, man, like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And if this thing doesn't work out, then blah, blah, blah. I'm really stressed out. Like, me and my wife are going to have another kid and blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I was like, man, like, these guys have these jobs, and I chase these jobs. Everybody, every comedian chases these jobs. You think you're a correspondent on The Daily Show? You feel like you're going to have it made. You feel like you get on SNL. Like, every comedian's chasing that at some point in their career. Mm-hmm. And then I listen to these people and I'm like, oh, they're just as stressed as I am right now. And this was probably like 2007 before I had anything going on. And I'm like, it was such an eye-opening thing for me because it was like, oh, Like, I'm assuming that I'm going to chase success and that's going to make me happy. But in reality, all my anxieties and nerves and fears are built into me. And the chasing success isn't going to fix any of them. And maybe I just need to learn how to live with them. And that opened up my eyes a lot. And then I was on this sitcom in 2010 that had all this buzz and was supposed to be my big break. And it was a fucking disaster. And I've talked about that too much in my career. But the really, really beautiful thing about it is when it failed, I didn't give a shit. Like, it didn't hurt. And I was like, oh, here's this success and this status symbol thing. And this job that was high profile that made me feel like I was part of the cool kids club. And it didn't make me that happy. And then when it failed, it didn't hurt that bad. And it made me realize, like, oh, I think my priorities are different than this. And I think I assumed the success was going to make me – success would help me be happy and put my demons to bed. But success and happiness aren't the same thing, at least for me. That was eye-opening, and that's why I tell you, that's how you wind up on public access TV for 4 years, though, is when I'm like, oh, success doesn't make me happy. Let me chase the creativity that does. And I don't know, that wound up being a good choice for me, I think, but keeps looping it around to me where success is a major question in my life because it's like, what is it? I don't even know what it is. So
it's so subjective. But do you think that once you've been directing yourself more toward family, do you feel like you're, not that it trivializes what you've done professionally, but do you feel like your scale is kind of shifted in a way?
Well,
in terms of that term of success in a way?
Well, it's interesting.
Does that make sense?
It's interesting because I think I understand your question, and I think there's some layers on it where it's more simple than that, where to me it's just about like certainty. And what I mean by that is I've never made a professional choice that I'm certain about in my life. It's always a crapshoot. It's always wondering, is this going to take up time?
I know that feeling.
Yeah. And it's like, is this, if I make this choice professionally, am I going down a road where that time would be spent better elsewhere? Or should I be going on more auditions and trying to do a traditional thing because I'm trying to be this underground guy? And that's working okay. But like, would that be more viable if I like made some efforts to bust out in a mainstream way and then looped it back around and earned the right to do my stuff? It's all that. But this is going to be schmaltzy. The only choice I've ever made in my adult life that I'm certain about is that my wife should be my wife. It's the only thing I ever made that I'm 100%. Like, I got lucky on that. She's the best. I'm lucky to have her in my life. And that's the one thing I'm certain about.
That is fracking adorable.
Thank you.
It's so rare that I've heard that from people. You know, there's a lot of people are like, and you're going, wow, did you just have like a very small pool to draw from? Or is this just, I guess this is what I get? Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, I've heard even married people are like, meh, he's all right.
No, well,
like you were never just, this should be something you're very sure about.
Indeed. And
so it's refreshing to hear you be so sweet and simply, you know, in a simple way, very, very, very romantic. It's very sweet.
But I'd like to think it's a realistic romance that my wife and I have. And it's, you know, my personal life was a fucking chaotic mess before I met her. And she solved that problem in my life. And also, she went out of her way to say to me, like, I'm a huge supporter of what you do. And if you die poor, we'll still die happy. And that was nobody's ever given me permission to be myself like that. So he let me know, food stamps, what's the deal with
amazing.
That? What's the deal with the food stamps? Now I'm going to turn it back on you.
Dude.
You've made this all about me. Well, guess what, my friend? The tables have turned. You're on the hot seat now.
Oh, sure.
You're on the hot seat, okay? This ain't
all right, honey, how much time you got? I've got a story.
Okay.
And a half.
Uh-huh. I'm not entirely sure where this conversation is going. You don't know either. Got a short break. We'll find out where it's going when we come back. Today's episode is brought to you by Merge Records, the label that over the last 25 years has been home to many great bands. And I don't even know why I need to say them, because you know this. Arcade Fire, Spoon, Neutral Milk Hotel. Everybody loves Neutral Milk Hotel. Merge recently released records by M. Ward, Benji Hughes, and the Mountain Goats, who I bet fans of this podcast like all those emotions and feelings that the Mountain Goats bring to the table. Look for new albums from Bob Mould and Eric Bachmann in stores later this month. Visit MergeRecords.com to learn about, listen to, and shop for music by these artists and many more. And speaking of shopping, listen to this. This is cool. Listeners of this podcast, you get 20% off any order using coupon code BEAUTIFUL at checkout. That's rad. 20% off Merge. You can stock up, get the whole Mountain Goats back catalog, you emotional little twerps. All right, listen, domestic shipping, as always, is free. You go to MergeRecords.com. You enter BEAUTIFUL at checkout. 20% off your purchase. Merge Records, home of independent music since 1989. It's all about the phone calls, baby, so let's get back into it. Here we go.
I've got a story.
Okay.
And a half.
Uh-huh.
All right. Well, I'll give you the super quick version that I lived in San Francisco and then Seattle for about three years. And then I moved down here. And I
was being
doing
LA,
all right,
it sounds like?
Los Angeles. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I know you're mostly in New York, so I don't know why I said here. I should.
Well, you mentioned you were in the studio audience at Midnight, so I knew. But I assumed for the listener,
yeah,
I should clear that up.
All right, everybody, I'm in Los Angeles. So I kind of, you know, came here. I'm a big podcast fan for, you know, years and all this stuff. And I'll do my best not to say anything too unanonymous. But so I was doing okay. I was staying with a friend of my mom's for a little bit out in Orange County, like out in Brea. And I was driving into Los Angeles to do these recordings. And I got to meet some of these amazing people who really changed how I looked at fame, how I really processed comedy and what it meant to me. And I was doing well for a while. And then I broke up with someone. It turns out when you break up with somebody, but they don't want you to live with them any longer. So I had found myself without residence. And so for a while I was kind of, you know, staying with friends anywhere in the driving distance of Los Angeles, pretty much wherever I could.
Uh-huh. So you find yourself homeless. You're not on the streets homeless, but you're living like a circus. You're living the circus life. You have no home.
I was a little bit, but then I was also living straight out of the car. But I was a sexiest mother in that Starbucks. I'll tell you what, every morning.
But wait, this is true. So you lived out of a car. You would sleep in a car. You would wake up in a car.
Yeah.
So you actually, you found yourself homeless. You explored levels of homelessness.
Oh, yeah. But every night I would fall asleep listening to, like, Professor Blastoff and stuff like that. And I actually got to tell Tig how much it helped me out this summer. It was amazing. Podcasts have been so huge for me. And, you know, I just had a couple of people who really kind of said the same thing that your wife did, which was, we support you regardless of your, you know, if you make this happen or not. And, yeah, I just had a few people really, you know, help me out. And I'm not sure how much I want to tell you because there's definitely some other stuff that I'm not super proud of, but it's definitely a long story. But
you can tell me whatever
I'm
you want.
I'm doing better.
I'm letting you know you're crying, and I'm telling you, I'm on the verge of tears. So this could just be.
Oh, well, don't do that.
No, please. I'm a big crybaby.
I'll give you the happier ending version.
No.
I woke up.
You don't have to make anything.
I woke up
happy
this morning, and then I got to, you know, I live indoors now.
You live indoors? That's a victory. That's a victory.
How long have you been indoors?
How long have you been indoors?
For the last, like, 2 months.
2 months. So, and how long were you living out of your car?
Off and on for, like, 6 months.
Wow.
So about the better part of last year, I was, and I know it's illegal, but there's this great spot in Santa Monica that's just absolutely, there's lots of cops, but at the same time, if you're in the right neighborhood, it's super safe. So if you got to live in your car. That's a place to do it.
So you're, we have an exclusive, we have an exclusive here on my show, which is that Santa Monica thumbs up for homeless living. But we're making jokes.
Well, and also,
I want to know.
I try to make jokes about it, but it was rough.
Well, that's what jokes are for, right?
I think that's why I've always been into comedy. Like, there've just been so many. I don't know if they were personally made, and that's the problem. Is I always wonder how much of my success has been, you know, or my perceived success is whether or not, you know, the roadblocks are put in place by me, or it, you know, am I my own saboteur? Creating all these roadblocks for myself? Am I not allowing myself to be happy? I get to work with some, you know, you were talking about SNL. I get to work with someone who used to be on SNL, and I get to do all these other things, but I can barely afford to do it. But I'm like, what's more fun? What's more important to me?
Yeah.
Being poor and getting to do that interesting thing, or going back to, you know, the Midwest where I'm from and working in a factory and not being that happy, but comfortable.
Well, I hear you. And I also feel like some people have an easy path, but then some people in art, it's like you got to at times, I think, decide, are you will. Like, I remember when I started doing stuff at UCB, I remember having that decision where I remember my parents sitting me down and they were like, what is going on where you, you started this when you were sophomore in college and you got a degree, but you almost dropped out of school because of this stuff. And now you're doing this stuff where you just perform for free all the time in New York, which is an intimidating city. And like, you're this depressed kid. And I remember having to make a conscious decision of like, this is what I'm going to do, even if it ruins my life. And I think sometimes some of us have to risk, like, I'll ruin my life completely if it means I get to do the thing I love. Sometimes you have to go all in on that. Now, can I ask you, I'm just going to put this out here.
That's exactly it.
I'm going to put some, it sounds like you and I have some similar stuff, but I'm also very willing to say that it sounds like you've.
No, you could not have worded that any better. I cannot express to you that was, yeah. I mean, if this destroys me, it will be the most amazing destruction I've ever experienced.
That's a beautiful phrase, the most amazing destruction I've ever experienced. Now, I'm going to put some stuff out there. In this conversation, you know, I think, like, you've revealed some stuff. You've gotten emotional, and I don't want to exploit that.
I
don't
want to. No. Go.
Never apologize. You know what,
I'm a big emotional person, and I don't apologize for that. I apologize for the crying where it interrupts my speech, because, you know what I mean, that kind of thing. But
hey.
Trust me, I'm a big emotional person.
You're in the world of podcasting. Do you know how many downloads that crying just got me? Do you know what Podmas is saying about that crying right now? Podmas is talking about the depths. Here's these calls, and sometimes they cut below the surface, man. Podmas, come on, you know the gift you just gave me. But listen, here's the thing. Is that you've lived a life that I think many people wonder about. And I think there's many people, it's interesting because, you know, I read a lot. I'm a very big nerd and I just try to consume information. And I've read a lot about, for example, like the working poor. There's a whole class of America that doesn't get talked about much, which is people who are employed but who do not make enough money to actually sustain themselves. It's a whole social class in America of people. It's so fascinating. I've read poverty, so many people.
Hey, get on food stamps until this month. Like, I went as long as I possibly could before I admitted I had to do that.
So I want to know what that's like. And I'm not asking, I don't want to twist your arm. I don't want to make this exploitative. But to me, it's like...
Twist my arm. Do you have any idea what an open book I am?
I'm learning quickly. But to me, some of the questions I have are like, that first night you sleep in a car, what's that like? Is there freedom? Is there a sense of freedom there? Is there a sense of fear there? What kind of people? Is there the one sense I get is that there's a whole hidden world amongst the homeless of, are there people you come to know? Are there other homeless? Are there people trying to help? What's the culture?
There are definitely, well, because I, you know, I wasn't on the street literally. So, I mean, being in a car definitely helped. I mean, I was sleeping on a comedian friend's floor on an air mattress for a little bit, and then I had to go and blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, I wasn't constantly in the car, but when I would, there would be, I would park next to a Starbucks close enough where I could get Wi-Fi so I could, you know, look for places and jobs and stuff like that. And then there's this one parking lot in Santa Monica specifically where there's a 24-hour subway, CVS, et cetera, that kind of thing. And I noticed that I wasn't the only one who enjoyed that parking lot. There was 80s metal guy. He would roll down his windows and just blast, like, you know, all kinds of, like, hair metal bands. And I swear he would just, like, he tried talking to me before. I'm like, nah, I'm good. I'm full up on friends. I don't need, you know, I know what got me here, which was just a lot of poor decisions. Yours might be a different story. So, but there would be a lot of them, you know, that would cover up their windows and just park in the parking lot. I mean, yeah. And just hang out.
And did you get the sense, I mean, these were, are these people just hanging out, or did you get the sense that these were other people?
Oh, no, no, no.
Living.
Oh, no, I see them there almost every other night and doing the same thing that I was doing, which was like, I would hang out there so I could use the bathroom, brush my teeth, you know, all that kind of stuff. Although once I did brush my teeth in the car, and when I went to spit out the window, I hit my head on the on the car door. I mean,
is that a particularly
nothing that will really humble you?
Yes. Is that a moment where you feel like the world is shining a spotlight on your situation?
I'm just going, hey, dum-dum, what are you doing?
Now,
you know,
here's...
I have a college degree.
Yeah.
And I can't find a job.
Yeah, and you're in a Starbucks parking lot. That's terrifying. It must be terrifying. It must be terrifying. And you're so...
It's a rock and a hard place.
Now you're sensing... You're noticing all these other people who are also pulling their cars into the same lot, and you realize there's other people who have naturally... Yeah. Found this world. Do you start to talk to these people? Is there information sharing, or is this a...
I definitely have talked. Usually I only talk to other women that I've seen, but the problem is, one of my friends said, there's a reason why you don't see many females, and this is a sad state of sexism, but it's true, I guess. But there's a reason why you don't see very many female homeless women, you know, on the street, because the ones you do see are generally bananas. I mean, beyond bananas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to the point where, you know, and the same thing, there aren't very many Asian homeless because Asians, in like most of their culture, is dealt around family. Same thing with Indian people. Like, you don't let that happen to your family.
That's,
you know,
really
middle
fascinating.
Middle class white people, they're like, well, good luck.
So there's certain ethnic cultures that, as a homeless person, you notice their families, even families who maybe don't have the financial capability to care for someone else, doesn't matter.
Right.
There's certain cultures that step up, and you see, and it is, as soon as you said that, I realized when you said that a lot of female homeless people maybe tend to be more bananas, I have, as soon as you said that, it made me think some of my living in New York, you know, you do interact with the homeless from time to time. And it does make me realize some of the most intimidating interactions I've had with homeless people are interactions where I felt like the person was maybe most unhinged. I do think that
the problem is a lot of people who are homeless, the problem is mostly is mental illness and then drug and alcohol abuse.
Right.
And I like to smoke a little pot and stuff like that, but that's by no means what got me to where I was.
Right. So,
you know.
And when you say the other culture, do you think that females from, like, do you think, what is it that you think keeps other females off the street and less mental illness? Do you think maybe there's more sympathy amongst families for females? Do you think that females have more of an ability to maybe link up with, the culture of homelessness, are females linking up with men in that world?
Yeah, it's really strange. A lot of times that's what it is. I mean, and I personally, I wasn't sure whether or not I should unpack this at all, but then I said, nah, F it. So I was, you know, whenever I would stay at people's houses, And like one of my friends, he was, you know, he would go to work and I'd stay at his house. I was doing what they call internet porn. So.
Wait, what do you mean?
You know, like cam porn, whenever you, if you've ever gone to look at porn and then you accidentally get redirected and you see a bunch of boxes with women on them.
Right. No, yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. So, I'm just talking about, so you would stay, but I want to be clear just on the timeline. So this was when you were in and out of homelessness, you would stay with someone and one of the ways you'd make quick money would be, you'd be, I think, it sounds like what you're referring to is what the internet calls a cam girl.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is, you know, not exactly my favorite, but it's the only job you can do where, you know, someone telling you to get naked, you don't have to call HR, you know.
Right. Why am I jumping in the middle like this? Because we got to take a short break, okay? We'll find out where this conversation is going to go when we come back. Today's episode, guess what, brought to you by Squarespace. Now, I will tell you, I've tried to build websites. It's like the Wild West. I'm 35 years old. Technology? No thanks. I need somebody who's going to make it easy. Easy to make things like a website or a portfolio or an online store. Guess who makes it easier than anybody else in the game? Squarespace. Their sites look professionally designed. Doesn't matter if you don't know how to code. They make it easy. Any skill level. You get in there, make a good looking website. It's intuitive. It's easy to use. You get a free domain if you sign up for a year. They're handing this website to you. I don't get why you're not making it right now. Get out there. Do it. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com. Guess what? When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code CG. You get 10% off your first purchase. CG, like Chris Gethard, the guy you're listening to right now. I'm telling you, they want to make your life simpler. Squarespace.com, offer code CG, get 10% off. Today's show is sponsored by Howl.fm, which is like Netflix for podcasts. With Howl Premium, you get exclusive access to a brand new Howl original comedy series, The Mysterious Secrets of Uncle Bertie's Botanarium, starring Jemaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords. You follow a ship, the Jewel of the Gravy Isles, on a mission to find the source of pleasure in the world, Heaven's Clover. Clearly, this is a podcast unlike any other. It's also got a rich, detailed sound design and original music produced by an outstanding creative team from New Zealand, and I cannot imagine how weird this one's going to get. With Howl Premium, you also get exclusive access to over 120 hours of Howl miniseries. You get audio documentaries like The Complete Woman, Finding the Funny with the Sklar Brothers, and Issa Rae's Fruit. You get 80 comedy albums, archives, WTF, Comedy Bang Bang, How Did This Get Made? They're all there. You get access to all of it on your iPhone, Android, whatever, the web, $4.99 a month. And with the promo code BEAUTIFUL, you get a full month free trial. Redeem the code. You go to the web, howl.fm. That's howl.fm. Use the promo code BEAUTIFUL for a one-month free trial, Howl Premium. Check out The Mysterious Secrets of Uncle Bertie's Botanarium, along with dozens of other things, hundreds of other things, thousands of other things. Check it out, howl.fm. Let's go ahead. Let's get back to the phone call. It sounds like what you're referring to is what the internet calls a cam girl.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing is, you know, not exactly my favorite, but it's the only job you can do where, you know, someone's telling you to get naked, you don't have to call HR, you know.
Right.
But the thing is, the thing is, you know, it's not who I am. It's not the best representation of the person I am. Mm-hmm. But it was one of those things that I'm like, and I haven't been able to do it at all because I just can't anymore. So I don't mind talking about it now. But the thing is,
and this
the reason
was,
why I bring that up.
This was the way you could make money in this stretch of your life. You needed cash at times, and this was it.
Yeah.
And then you have to go on these cams. Yeah. This is a thing where you're like, this is not me. But then you have to go on these cams and also put on a show where you feel, where these men watching will feel like, oh, here's this carefree person, and we're chatting back and forth and this and that.
Hi. Oh my God, you're so cute. Oh my God, Sarah.
Oh, so these are one of
them. I love this.
And are you, I'm certainly not an addict.
Go for it. I brought it up.
Well, no, here's my thing. Because you're sharing, I'm just going to be open and honest. This is not a world I dabble in, but as a man, the internet affords a certain level of...
I watch porn a lot.
Yeah, there you go. So I know some of these sites, it's like big groups of people watching at the same time. Some of them people are paying for one-on-one interactions, and I just think...
Right, that's what I would do.
You would do the one-on-one interactions, which to me feels a little bit more intense in a way.
Well, so what happens is, you know, you'll be in a big group room, and then you know, someone will be like, oh my God, you're so awesome. I have to have you to myself. I have to rescue you.
Which I believe is like the, I don't want to plug any sites. If they would like to be a sponsor, this to me feels sort of like the Chatterbait model. Isn't Chatterbait the big site that's along these lines?
Yes. Wow. I'm on that one and I'm also on another one. I don't want to advertise the other one because they steal too much of women's money. I mean, like they would take it takes so much. So if anyone ever hears this, if you ever really like a cam girl and want to support her, send her Amazon gift cards or something.
I know. In my moments of dabbling, I've noticed that there are Amazon wish lists oftentimes. You're saying Chatterbait is a little bit more empowering for the performer, though.
A little bit more. Like, they definitely do make a little bit more percentage-wise. And that's the thing. Like, people think that they're being so generous. I'm like, every time you donate a dollar to me, I only get 23 cents.
Wow.
I'm like,
so you're saying
you
we
know,
can put this
out.
Here's
dollars.
A thing we can put out there into the world. And I think, you know, I think a lot of the listeners of this show are going to generally be, I think there are young men who tend to follow my work. If you are someone who experiences pornography, which is not wrong, but you are also someone who wants to empower, if you want to empower the performers, you're saying if there's an option to send someone something directly, those Amazon wish lists.
Oh
you're
my God. Buy their wish list. Yeah, like, you know, and a lot of times if you've got their Twitter or something, buy them something and they'll do Skype shows and stuff. They're not supposed to say that because I got banned for 2 days for giving someone my email address.
Wow.
Go follow your girl on Twitter. Go ask her, like, about Skype shows and stuff. That way it's not recorded or whatever and blah, blah, blah. It's all on your own terms.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, can I ask you a hard question? Can I ask you a difficult question? You have mentioned...
I was going to say hard is a little too double entendre for this conversation.
Yeah, I don't mean to segue out of the pornography section with erection jokes. I'm not,
no, please.
I promise.
Please
no,
do.
But you mentioned certain cultures, people's family embrace them. You mentioned that maybe women, people's families are a little more sympathetic. So a difficult question.
Well, and that's why I mentioned it, was that women would be taken in more often.
Yeah. Here's my difficult question, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want. Where was your family? What was that situation?
I know. What do you think?
I mean, you don't have to answer it, and I know that might be a difficult one, and I don't want to force it. But if you're willing to share, it is the...
Do you remember this background of podcasting, et cetera? The only person who's got, you know, the market covered on full disclosure is probably Dan Harmon. So I'm like... I'm right in that vein. You asked me, you know what? If someone else feels like I've said something that they wish they could say or connect with what you or I have said at all, I feel successful. So we're good. Yeah, my family, my mom, actually, I did tell her about the cam stuff, and she wasn't super excited, but I told her a lot of funny stories and stuff. And by the end of our conversation, she was like, you know, as long as you're doing it because you want to, if you don't want to do it, don't do it, that kind of stuff.
And is it even before that, is your mom aware of your living out of a car situation?
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, like, my mom personally couldn't afford to do more than, I mean, she was paying for my phone. And like that, she doesn't buy me presents for Christmas or anything like that, or birthdays. She pays for my phone, and that's amazing. I mean, so wow. I definitely, yeah. But so my dad and my stepmom, they basically were like, well, you can come home whenever you want, but this is your mess. If you you decided to go out to California like 5 years ago and all this other stuff, if you're not making it work or something, that's on you. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. So you don't come from a rich family. It sounds like, and hardworking people
they want to have your back. Midwestern. Yeah. And the thing is, if I moved home, they would be the first people to like, yeah, stay here for a while. We'll make you feel bad in about a week. And then, you know, that you're not doing anything or if you haven't found a job, but.
So you can say, very honestly, more than almost anyone else I've ever known in 15 years of being an artist, you can say, I wanted to chase my art bad enough that I was willing to fall on the sword to such a degree that I lived out of a fucking car to make it happen. You can say that so genuinely. Yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing.
You know what? Honestly, there was a, sorry to plug this again, but I was, you know, I go through spouts of like marathoning or binging or whatever on certain, you know, people's shows, that especially if I hadn't heard them. And one of them I hadn't heard was Professor Brassoff, and there's one episode called Wealth. And it, I was listening to it in the car, just trying to fall asleep, you know, and just reclined back. And there was this moment where someone said, "How, you know, what is wealth to you? Is it having a lot of money? Or is it, for me, it's being able to spend time with my wife and kids. That to me is wealth," and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this guy understands exactly what I'm talking about. Because I would be, if I were back in the Midwest in my crappy little town, you know, living very financially comfortable, I would be more miserable, because I've done that. I would be more miserable than buying all my groceries at the 99-cent store and, you know, being embarrassed to get food stamps and, you know, making my furniture out of cardboard boxes and stuff for now.
And
it's so much more, it's so much more rewarding for me. And not everybody feels like that. That's why a lot of people move home.
Yeah, for sure. And it's really fascinating to me, because I'll say full disclosure, like, I've gone for it, but at the end of the day, I grew up very working class, and I'm an open book as well. And my parents, my father managed to, he made a lot of money right at the tail end of when I was in high school. And I always knew my parents had my back, and I think it was a similar mentality to yours. But it's also, my point is, you're in this middle ground where I knew I had my parents' support, even though they had a lot of doubts. But I also knew that my safety net and my parents was one that could actually support me. And it sounds to me like you've got kind of amazingly specific safety net where you can go for it. You have people's love and support, but that love and support does not extend to a degree where
it
can...
Oh, it's finite.
Yeah, it has,
it's
there's
not
clear
an
limits.
Unconditional love and support.
And it's almost to me, as someone in your position who's really dedicating themselves to this so hard, that idea of, like, you can move home to the Midwest and not live this life that at times is filling you with such doubt and at times such shame, as you've described it.
I want to quit. I want to quit so often.
That safety net must be such a temptation, but it's also one that it's the end of the dream.
So the most ironic part was every time that I've been on cam and had someone go, you know, and there's a way that they can call your phone and stuff like that, where it's rerouted through a server and stuff. I would have people tell me how much they loved, you know, I would do different voices for people, like some people like Southern and blah, 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 or, you know, British or something. So I would do different voices for people or act however they wanted. And the worst part that always dug at me so hard was, you're telling me how much you love my voice, and that's the thing I wanted to do. And it just, you know, I just wanted to be like, can you go tell someone? But I don't want to tell these people my real name, because I, you know, some of them are very psychotic and will try and find you.
Yeah.
But you know, that's the thing, is like, part of me is just, it killed me sometimes to have someone tell me how much they would love to see me do something else. And half the time, two of my biggest customers never even wanted me to take my clothes off.
Wow.
And,
well, I'm
going
to tell you too, just to jump in on that, you do have a beautiful voice. You have the best voice. And it sounds like things are going a little better now. How's it going now? So I want to know, first of all, it sounds like you're starting to move on the podcast stuff you've indicated. Sounds like even if there's cardboard furniture, you got a roof over your head now?
I do. I was going to say, I'm like, I think you were in, were you in the Earbuds documentary? I think they, for some reason, there were so many podcast people that they interviewed.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I'm in there somewhere. So if you want
to. And the anonymity thing is arbitrary. I made it up. It's a hook. We can ignore it if you want.
No,
you can tell us any specifics like this.
Yeah, You edit however you like. But the reason why I bring that up is it's one of those, like, I've been a podcast fan for so long, and it was only within the last 2 years that people have been going, you should do this. Why aren't you trying to do this?
And yeah.
I'm like, oh. So within the last couple weeks, I've been cutting together stuff and, you know, hopefully release something soon. But it just would kill me every time I get that, oh, I love your voice. I love your voice.
Yeah.
Put me, I want to be a cartoon. I want to meet everyone. And, you know, I don't.
Yeah.
You're amazing.
No, you're amazing. This is one of the most amazing conversations I've ever had in my life. We got about 9.5 minutes left, and I wish we could talk for hours.
I should let you talk to more people. So.
No. I want to talk to you forever. You're the best. But I can't imagine those moments when you're gutting it out. You're doing stuff to survive, yeah. And this stuff is sexual, and you're saying it's not who you are, and then someone says something that reminds you of your dream. I don't know how you keep going. I don't know how you keep going at that point.
Oh, man. You know what? I just knew that I would, you know, I think you said this, you know, but it's just, I would rather let this destroy me. I would rather let this consume me completely whole, like a giant whale off the side of a cruise ship, and go out having done something or tried to do something really great.
Well, that's beautiful. And can I point something out that's really amazing? Is that you brought up in the beginning, we were joking. First of all, you called up and you were like, I write wacky questions. That's what you were going to talk about. Your wacky questions you write down. And then,
well, you're a comedian. I didn't think you wanted to get all...
I'm barely a comedian. Anybody who knows my work at this point knows I'm barely a comedian. Half the shit I do is sad. Over half my work is sad. How am I a comedian? But listen, you brought up I would be swallowed by a whale, and that's that. And you said that and it seemed like kind of just a joke or arbitrary. But then when you think about all the Joseph Campbell shit out in the world, there's like a whole part of the hero's journey, which is the belly of the whale. And then you describe this beautiful hero's journey you're on, where you went out and you're chasing something. You have an actual grail quest in mind to be a successful person in this field you've chosen. And you sacrifice everything along the way. You do some things you're not proud of in the name of doing it. You barely hang on. There's so many chances to give up. And you literally are living a hero's journey. And I'll tell you what, I don't see any way you're going to fail. Can I say something just totally from the bottom of my heart? And I'm saying it now, even though this would be a way to end this podcast if I want to be strategic and I'm looking at the timer, but I want to make sure we have the full conversation, which is this. We were talking before about how I still have this whole deprecating shtick, and that's a shtick that has served me well over time. But I am aware that I am more successful than that shtick now. It doesn't ring as true as it used to, and I can use it for laughs.
Yeah.
But I will say this. Having a TV show named after me, I'm now in a position where sometimes people will come to me and they'll say, hey, give me things. Hey, I deserve things. And I've had some people, I'll tell you what, I'll be totally honest, and I hope this doesn't hurt their feelings saying this. I've had some people come to me who say, like, hey, I should be a writer on your show. And there's been a few examples where
why should you be a writer? What have you done?
Exactly.
How hard are you working on your craft every day?
And these are good people. These are friends. These are people who have worked on the show in some capacity. But it's like, you haven't put it on the line yet. And just because I'm in a position to give it to you, your ability to get in a position where you and I can have this conversation is in some ways necessary to get a job like this, but it's not all you need. And like, there is a part of me just knowing where I came from and my mentality about art, which is like, are you willing to fucking die for this shit in a very real way, not in a hyperbolic way?
Yeah.
Like, would you actually fucking freeze to death on the street if this didn't happen for you? And that's a question that
I pretty close a few times because being even in Santa Monica during the winter is rather rough.
I can't imagine. Even with a car to sleep in. Because that's the thing I would imagine is there's like a basic level where there's some level of like, well, yeah, you got a car, but it's like, well, are you going to sit there and burn that fucking gas? Or are you going to risk the fact that your battery might die if you turn the fucking heat on for too long?
Oh, no. Blankets. You don't run the gas.
You can't afford it. So my point is this, is you have this story to tell. And it's a story unlike any story I've ever heard. and that there are people out there who can afford opportunities. And I bet the people who are the real deal are going to be willing to listen to that story, because I bet they've had to make some similar decisions that they were willing to struggle and didn't have to struggle. I'd like to think that in my gut, I was ready to struggle the way that you were ready to struggle, but I didn't have to, due to some good luck,
I didn't think I was ready. I never, if you would have asked me, are you willing to do this? I probably would have said no until I was, you know, put in that position.
But,
and I think
that's amazing.
You know,
you were put in that position. You had to keep fucking doubling down. You kept having to say, is this worth it? Is this worth it? And for some fucking reason that even I don't know if I agree with, you've said yes. Like, is being homeless
exactly
worth chasing my dream? Yes. Is doing pornography worth chasing my dream? Yes. Anything to fucking make it happen. And on top of that, you're nice. And on top of that, you're smart. And I can tell you, as someone who is entering a phase of my life and career where I can sometimes afford people opportunities, someone who's nice and smart and has fought for it as hard as you are and who has earned it as much, if you put yourself in this position where you are willing to tell this story and you are willing to not exploit it and not make it like, oh, here's I'm selling you this instead of my talents. But if you make it clear to people, I have fought so hard and I'm willing to go this far, there's no way you're not going to get what you want. There's no way you're not going to be successful. As long as you actually are talented and skilled at the fields you're chasing, there's no way someone willing to take it this far won't find allies. That's one of the main things I have found about art, is like, you don't just need, it's not a matter of finding like other people who, in my case, it's comedy. It's not about finding other people who are funny or who share my sense of humor. It's about finding fucking allies. That's who you find. That's why I have found like some of my best friends who are artists aren't even comedians. They're musicians. Cause I'm like, right, we don't even need to do the same thing, but I'm serious. You'll find your allies. You'll find your allies. Thank you'll sure. find your people who you, because you're one, I'm telling you, I can say this, 15 years doing comedy in New York, which is not always the easiest world, very competitive world.
No, I can't imagine it.
You're someone who I, just in talking to you for 57 minutes, you're willing to fight harder than anybody I've heard about. And also, you actually lived it. It wasn't just, I know so many people who have said to themselves, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. You're one of the only people I've ever talked to who's actually done whatever it takes. You have lived. I hope this makes you laugh and doesn't feel like judgment, because it's not judgment at all. But I will say, you have lived, you have actually committed to living the nightmare that a lot of us say we would be willing to live in a theoretical world that we had to. And you did it. And it's amazing. And you're going to crush it. You're going to crush it. There's no way you're not.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So, yeah.
This was amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I got the fortunate, you know, some things do work out in my favor. And you know what? I chalked today up as a win already. So, thank you.
Thank you for being so open and so honest. And prefer being willing to share this, because it's fascinating. Say whatever you want.
Oh, I just want to say one more thing, and you can cut this if you like, but I started a podcast group, and I just wanted to say hi to the Nighttime Phone Corner. So that's it.
The Nighttime Phone Corner. Do you really think I'm a callous enough person that after all this, I'm actually going to be like, well, this has to be anonymous. Cut that part out. Say whatever you want. Hold on. No, wait, hold on.
There's no. Almost 1,000 people in there. So
what's it called again?
Nighttime Foam Corner.
The Nighttime Foam?
It's partially
foam?
Named after Harris.
Wow. Look at
F-O-A-M,
that.
F-O-A-M, yeah.
F-O-A-M, not phone like telephone, foam like fucking styrofoam. Nighttime Foam Corner. I'm going to go ahead and break the whole anonymous rule. Plug whatever you want. You have a show coming out. You have anything you want to plug, you do it. I don't give a fuck. As long as you don't mind people maybe finding out who you are, I don't give a shit. I need to use whatever platform I have to let you get a leg up as much as this might apply. So if any Earwolf fans or Gethard Show fans are listening, you fucking commit to supporting this person, because who has ever lived the shit? I talk a lot of shit that people respond to, and you're living the shit. So go ahead, plug away. We have a minute left. I'm going to say this. If your plugs take longer than a minute, don't let the fucking bell ring. Don't do it. Plug your shit. Whatever platform I have is your platform. What do you need to plug? I don't give a shit about the anonymous thing. It's fake.
Okay. All my stuff is
You can find links to anything and everything on my Twitter at Julia W. D. Harrison.
Julia W. D. Harrison, it's so nice to meet you. We are no longer anonymous. I will be following you momentarily.
Oh, thank you.
I don't care, Greta. I don't care. We need to get this person's back. Julia W. D. Harrison, I'm breaking the rules for you. We made that shit up. 26. Stop the clock, John. Stop the clock. We're breaking every rule, Greta. I can't let this homeless artist who's fought this hard not co-op my platform. Gethard Show fans, you are a cult. Everybody knows you're a cult. I am your guru and your leader. You go fucking subscribe to Julia W.D. Harrison right now on Twitter. We get this person's back hard, Julia W.D. Harrison. What else do you need to plug?
Well, I actually do a couple of voices. I'm one of the leads on there's a Shark Dropper show called Doppel Avenue Hurt. I have links and stuff to that on there. So, you know, but yeah, go listen to that stuff. And I'm cutting together a new show where I'm doing all the voices and things and editing everything. And it's kind of like super ego, sort of.
Okay.
Like short little vignettes and things. I can email you just a short bit if you're ever interested before I actually release it.
Sure.
I'm not quite done editing.
So do me a favor.
Yeah.
Because we got to wrap up. Do me one favor, though, before we move on from this. Because we can cut anything you want. There's a lot of stuff you shared knowing it was anonymous.
Leave it all in.
You're sure. You're positive. You're ready to share this story with the world and attach your name to it. Because that's a choice you need to make. And I don't want to force you into sharing that story before you're ready.
No, my whole, I can't not be the person I am. And I'm not embarrassed of the things that I've done or the choices I've made. The only reason I didn't tell people about the cam stuff is I just didn't want people to find me. You know, like find, you know, and then, so as long as you don't know my porno name, you know, we're good. But it's just, I'm not embarrassed of it. And if someone else has, there's even a cam girl, open cam girl in our podcast group. So go out and do your thing, girl.
Which is the foam
even,
corner. What is the, what foam corner?
Nighttime foam corner.
Nighttime foam
there's
corner.
There's a link in my, so any of the biggest Earwolf supporters, you know, and people who are on the message boards, I used to go in and find some of them. And some of the biggest, like, Comedy Bang Bang people, you know, the guest heads, all those people, I would find them and bring them into my podcast group.
I'm going to do everything I can to help.
They meet up and go to live shows. It's amazing.
That's great. So, and I'm glad to have your back. Thank you for sharing this story.
And I know we've gone over time, so.
No, we're breaking every rule for you. This is the only one, I'm telling you. You're the only one we've broken any rules for, and I've broken literally the only two rules, which is the length of time and the anonymity.
Well, you're breaking my heart.
You broke everybody's heart. You broke my heart. Are you kidding me? One last question, because we do have to go. Who would write your country's national anthem?
Oh, God. Why is it I always write the questions and can't think of who would do it? It would probably be somebody like, it would probably be like a combination of Beyonce and Ani DiFranco. You mix someone in the middle there. Very heartfelt, but also very funky.
So you're saying someone who lands directly between Beyonce and Ani DiFranco. I think that's Regina Spektor. Sounds to me like you mean Regina
Spektor. I would love that. She would be an amazing national anthem writer. Regina Spektor, I'm starting my own company, or my own country, and you go ahead and write my national anthem. Thank you.
Okay. I'll talk to Regina Spektor if I ever meet her.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Please, thank you for being so honest and so open and letting me in on so many worlds that I've always wondered about and have never
known. My pleasure. I hope you have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. Bye.
That call went there. As I said during the call, I'm barely even a comedian at this point. In what way do I even say that I'm a comedian? But I'm totally okay with that if it means that I get to hear about that person's life and fight and come to meet her and support her. So please, as I said at the end, let's all get Julia's back. She's fighting so hard, harder than I bet 99% of us have ever had to fight. So let's get her back. Let's do the right thing. Let's be a community and support one of our own. I think that that's a fair thing to do. If you like the show, please spread word about it. Let your friends, family, social media followings know. I know it's a thing that everybody asks for, but I gotta ask for it. It's the way of the world these days. Subscribe on iTunes. Helps so much. Rate, review if you like it. Helps so much. Have a few people to thank. Shell Shag for the intro music. My friend Shell Shag put out a new album last year, and I'd get their whole back catalog if I were you, because it's great. It's great music and the story. I want to thank the Reverend John DeLore. I want to thank Greta Cohn for producing it. Having my back through even the intense phone calls, that's really great. You want to know about me, when I might be coming to your town, dates on the road, chrisgethard.com, thechrisgethardshow.com for any info on the TV show. That's that. We'll be back with more. You know what? Go on the Earwolf forum. Tweet at me, at Chris Gethard. Let me know what animal you would be eaten by. It's a fascinating question. Thank you, Julia, for letting me steal your question. Beautiful Anonymous. We'll see you next week. Next time on Beautiful Anonymous, you'll hear this and more.
My grandfather was World War II guy, and my grandmother was actually a French spy during the Second World War, and that's how they met. He ended up rescuing her from Berchtesgaden. She was held captive in the Eagle's Nest. And
no, wait, you said your grandmother got rescued from Berchtesgaden. That's not... Wasn't that like Hitler's private compound?
Yeah, that was where he had said if Berlin was ever to fall, that would be where the last of the Reich would put up a defense.
Next time on Beautiful Anonymous.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.